I'm a simple guy. I don't need to buy a bunch of stuff. I just like my life to be cool, you know. So we're like, you know, we're starting to stack in the bank. Things are going well. And I start to develop a reputation around town as an actual real, as the real deal. A guy who closes, when he gives you a commitment, he follows through on his commitment. Even if he makes a bad buy, he'll always close.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Higher Standard Podcast, where we give you ultra premium, unfiltered truth when it comes to building your wealth and curating the lifestyle of your dreams. No games, no drama, and no shenanigans. I am your host, Chris Nahibi, and I'm here to help you distill the immense amount of information and disinformation out there on the interwebs and give you the opportunity to choose a higher standard for yourself. There are no gurus here, and no one gives a damn about how wealthy you look. I'm an attorney and a banker, amongst other things. Does that mean you should listen to me? Hell no. This is just full disclosure that while we talk about money, wealth, law, investing, and a lot of related topics, you should always speak to your own advisors for an opinion tailored to your unique investment perspective. I am obligated to tell you that nothing contained in this show is in fact legal or investment advice and is being provided solely for entertainment purposes. So sit back, relax your mind, and get ready for a different kind of podcast where we elevate your baseline in crispy, high-resolution audio. This isn't a different standard. It's the higher standard. Hello, friends. Welcome back. This week's episode, I've got an extra special guest. But before I announce who he is, I want to explain how this came about. So several weeks ago, I was talking to a mutual friend of mine in Jamil Damji. And I was saying, like, this guy is just so positive and just so, like, gregarious. Like, he's the kind of personality that should be on TV. And the mutual friend said, well, actually, it's funny you mentioned it. He has a show coming out that's going to air on A&E called Triple Digit Flip. And sure enough, the show aired. It did so damn well that season 2 and season 3 are already greenlit, and they haven't even gotten to the first season yet. And I think as you get into this episode, you're going to figure out why. The guy is just, he's just a good dude. There's no other way to put it. He's just a good dude. I knew him already because he was kind of internationally known in a lot of ways in the wholesaling space. He was a co-founder of Keegley. They're the number one wholesaling franchise. They have over 75 franchises. But he single-handedly, in his social media, he had a Straight Outta Compton video. I'll never forget it. It was on YouTube. It was 26 minutes long, 27 minutes long. I got 24 minutes into it and was hooked. I was like, this is actually entertaining and educational, just like his television show. It's equal parts. He's super close to his family. We have a similar cultural upbringing and kind of mentality to a lot of things. But, you know, he's just trying to be a positive force and to teach people. He's trying to impact people's lives. And it was because of him that it really changed my perspective on wholesaling from being this predatory business that's not actually taught right and people leave things out to this is something you can do and you can do the right way. It just takes an extra special person like Jamil to actually do that. And if that sounds like hyperbole on my part, believe me, it's not. Dive into this episode, give it a listen to the end, and if you can't say to yourself, like, damn, that's a good dude, look at all the adversity that he's overcome, I don't know how else I can convince you. I always say that success is not a destination, success is a journey. This story is a story of that journey. Hope you enjoy it. I loved this episode. I wanted to say thank you so much for coming on. You honestly were such a gracious person about just being willing to come on to a show that just started. And I know a mutual friend linked us up and everything else, but you didn't know me and it meant a tremendous amount. But I actually knew you.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. You were the guy. You were the guy who turned around my negative outlook on wholesaling, on flipping properties, just because you had this like gregarious personality. You just seemed awesome. And when I heard you got this show on A&E, I was like, wow, like this makes sense. This guy's that guy. Like he should be on a show.
I appreciate that.
So I was kind of hoping you could unpack for me, for the audience, you know, how you got here, how Jamil landed in the position that he's at today, and, you know, what kind of work it took for you to get there.
I'm happy to, man. In fact, If anybody can take any inspiration from this, please do. So I'm going to start off by saying, man, I didn't have it easy, right? So I didn't come from much. My mom and dad are both Indian immigrants. Actually, we're Indian Africans. So going back to colonialism, my great grandfather was on a ship that went from India to Africa, And he became a part of the indentured workers that were installed by the British in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, to kind of act as a buffer between the British and the African population. And fast forward to the 70s, my parents had to leave Africa during African nationalization. So I'm a product of political refugees, in all honesty. And so my parents, they came to the West. I was born in Los Angeles. And at the age of five, we moved to Canada, where I grew up.
Oh.
And I had humble beginnings. You know, my parents are both, my dad, a blue-collar worker. My mom worked as a data entry operator. And they just worked all their entire lives, 10, 12 hours a day, very hard. My sister and I basically raised each other. She's 6 years older than me. She's my co-star in the show. And you can see our dynamic is pretty neat. And it's real, you know, like she's my best friend. She's been my business partner since we got into real estate. So how I got into real estate in the first place is let me back up. I was supposed to be a doctor like every other brown kid.
Doctor, right? Or lawyer. You're brown. You got
a
lawyer,
right? Yeah. I was supposed to be so I wanted to be a lawyer, but my parents didn't think there was enough prestige in me being an attorney. So they were like really forcing me and pushing me to try to become a doctor.
I am an attorney. There's not enough prestige in being an attorney. So you made the right call.
If in another life, bro, I would have loved to be a lawyer. I'm so fascinated by the law. I'm so fascinated by litigation and like just that whole process. I know it's not as sexy as it might sound, but
it's not sexy. Yeah, it's not. I mean, trust me, I'm in real estate too. So it goes to show you, I'm in real estate and finance, but I get it. It's funny how that was the thing back then and all the adversity that our parents went through. They found so much comfort in that, right?
They did. Because they're working so hard and they're looking at it like, man, if we could just have our kids do what these guys, who the people who they saw making money, who were making strides in our communities. I know you come from, you know, a similar background, Iranian and Middle Eastern. And so looking at it from that point of view, you've been through what I went through. You know, we kind of had very similar upbringings, I'm sure.
Yeah. My dad was a janitor when he came to this country, man. And he built what he built for himself, and he's had good times and bad times. But I'll tell you this much, and I know you feel this way. Adversity builds the hell out of some good character.
Oh my gosh, does it ever?
Right?
Does it? You need that. You need that so bad, right? So I'm getting straight A's in university. I take the test, the MCAT, and I do well on the MCAT.
Wow, you were gonna go. You were serious.
I was gonna go, and I get my interview. I apply to medical school, and I get an interview. And in my interview, I bomb it, and I bomb it because they said I'm too young, I'm too immature. They just didn't think that I had the right attitude at the time to be a doctor. And so they asked me to apply again. I lost my shit.
Wow. I bet you did. How old were you? Like 18? I mean,
22.
How old are you? 22? Yeah. What? I mean, seriously, what the fuck do you know about the world at 22 anyway?
Nothing.
You expect somebody at 22 to be that serious? That's ridiculous. Anyway, whatever.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think I said some dumb shit like, hey, they're like, what do you want to be? You know, what's your goal in medicine? I want to be a plastic surgeon. Why? Because I want to make the world a better looking place. And I don't know. I mean, that's what I meant then. You know, 22-year-old Jamil thought that was fun. And I thought that, right? So they didn't think it was fun or funny. And so I didn't get in. But at that day, you know, when I got the letter in the mail and I was told it was done, you know, I had to reapply at another time. I saw that somebody else controlled my destiny. And that was really difficult for me to swallow. When someone can just decide for me that this isn't going to be what I get to do in my life, that's not the course I want to take. That's not the path I need to be on. Because no, thank you. No, you cannot say what someone can and can't do. People, if they work hard and they do good, they should be able to do and actualize in any way they want. So that sent me in a trajectory, and I went into entrepreneurship. I got into a business by accident. Actually, the girl I was dating at the time, she had a friend who was running a company that was failing. It was a media company where back in 2001, 2002, they were trying to convince people that the internet was a thing and they should move their business from yellow pages to the internet to get a website. So they actually needed somebody, a salesperson, to come in and help them because this company was failing because nobody believed in the internet. 2001, right? They were like, no, I'm not going to do this. The internet's just chat rooms and porn, right? That's what everyone was thinking. Well, that's what the internet was in 2001, right? It was chat rooms and porn.
And so were the first DVDs. And now everything we watch is streamed and it all came from the porn industry. So as much as we hate it, it's real.
It's real. Yeah. And so So the people that we were trying to convince to, you know, buy these websites, I do well in this company to a point where I take over and I get 51% control of it, right?
Oh, wow.
Because I can bring in sales and I blow up the sales floor. I got, you know, people calling businesses out of the yellow pages. And I come to find out after hundreds of sales that every website that I sold for $600 actually cost us $700 to make.
What?
So I lost money. I lost money on every one of those sales. And I'm just like, what is happening here, right? This is stupid. So in my sadness, one day I'm walking by my business partner's office and he's having a conversation with his dad. And they're talking about this deal they're doing where they're going to make $160,000. And I stop dead in my tracks. I basically just enter the office and I ask, how can I get involved in what you guys are talking about right now? And I was very quickly, you know, pushed away and said, Jamil, you need money. We're home builders. You can't do this. It's not for you. And I'm like, okay, I get that. But then the dad said something that was interesting. It's like, the only thing we really need right now are more building lots. And I asked for him to explain what that meant. And he said, we're looking for these little houses that are on 50 by 120 foot lots that we can bulldoze so we can build these duplexes on. And if you can find us one of those, we'll buy one of those and we'll pay you.
Oh, man. Great. Light bulb moment right light there, bulb, right?
Right? Yeah. Tomorrow, the next day, I'm walking my dog. And I live in one of these neighborhoods where this kind of action's happening. I'm watching these things get bulldozed, these duplexes come up. Walking down the street, I pass by a house I tried to rent 3 months earlier that was $200 out of my budget and it's still for rent. $200 made or break where I lived at that time. Right, just kind of gives you an idea of my life at that moment. I call the person and I ask if instead of renting their property, if they'd be interested in selling it. And the lady said, yeah, at the right price. And I asked, what would that number need to be? And she just very easily said $350,000. I told her I'd give her a call back. I ran to the office. I had a conversation with my business partner and I asked him, how much will you guys pay for one of these building lots? And he's like, $400,000 all day long. So now I have a $50,000 problem to solve because I can buy this house for $350,000 and I have a buyer for it for $400,000, but I don't want a commission. I want to sell it. I want to buy it and sell it, but I don't know how to do this. Yep. So I do what I know how to do and I go to the phone book and I start calling attorneys because in Canada, it's lawyers who convey real estate.
Yep. Escrow and title. Yeah.
And so I start calling lawyers, right? I get all the way to S, David Steed. I will never forget this attorney's name. David Steed. David Steed, man, if you're listening to this, I love you, dude. He was so fresh out of law school that he didn't have a secretary. He answered his own phone. But it tells you how far I got down the line because I got to S-T-E-E, Steed. That's how far I had to call down. That's how many phone calls I had to make to attorneys before I got somebody to talk to me. And he said, what you're trying to do is called a skip transfer. And it's extremely easy to do. All you need are two contracts, one where you buy the property, but you have to remember to put this on your name and or nominee. Then on the second contract, you're going to be the seller of the property. So you're going to buy it in your name and or nominee. You're going to sell it on the next contract. You're going to bring both of those documents to me. And then in a few weeks, I'll get you a check. And that was it. That was it. So a few weeks later, I get a $48,000 check on accident. Like this is just falling into my lap, falling into my life. And I realize that there's something to this, right? Because this is more money than I've ever made in my life. Oh, it's more money than my parents have ever seen in their lives.
Yeah, it never made it that fast, right? I totally get that. It's that light bulb moment. And then when you actually get the money at the end of it, wow, you had to feel like $1 million.
I didn't cash it until this is how unsophisticated I was. I folded it up and I put it in my wallet, this cashier's check. And I didn't realize that they go stale after 6 months. I didn't want to cash this thing. I never want to cash this check. Like,
you gotta
this
hold is, on to it.
It means so much to me. I finally cashed it anyways. But, you know, it was great. I immediately start doing this full time. And so I get into my car and I start driving around looking for handwritten for rent signs. Because I realized that these people that are self-managing their rentals, they're the owners, and I can just have an honest conversation with them and see if there's an opportunity to sell. And I start crushing it. Then I realize that there are these guys in the same city who are converting apartment buildings into condominiums. And I take the same philosophy from what I was doing in single family over to multifamily, and I just call the handwritten for rent sign guy, right, who's got a little building, and I ask if he's tired of his crummy building and his dumb tenants who don't pay rent, and if he'd be interested in selling if the price was right. And almost 7 times out of 10, Chris, the answer was yes.
Wow.
So, you know, fast forward some time, my sister starts, you know, joins me in what we're doing. We start doing really well. We make money, but like everybody, I get this sense of, I need more. I need to be bigger. I want more prestige. My dad still wasn't super proud of me and what I was doing. Like he couldn't go to his family and be like, my son is a special person. You know, he couldn't do it because he was just like, he didn't even understand what the hell I was doing. Right.
It's crazy how much I can relate. My dad did the exact, well, after I graduated law school, decided I didn't want to practice. My dad never told anybody I was in banking. I swear to God, the day my dad started telling everybody I was in banking was when he saw my tax return inadvertently one day. And he was like, wait, you make this much, son? I'm like, yeah. I shit you not. Every conversation, my son, the banker, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's crazy, though, because our parents, they're interesting in that they really want to live through us a little bit, right? Because they didn't have an opportunity to get to the situations we're in, right? And so it's great that my dad had that. And trying to make my dad proud was really something that I was chasing for a while. So I say to my sister, let's forget selling these buildings. We've made millions. You know, we made millions, Chris, in a short amount of time. I said, why don't we start developing these ourselves? The next 4 buildings we get, since we've got this cash, why don't we buy them, take them down, and actually do the renovations?
Yeah, learn the business, get into it.
And she was like, you know what? I'm in with you. Let's go. Now, we don't have good credit. You know, we're just new. And so I have to bring my parents in to co-sign these construction loans. And they do, because that's what my parents are. They're beautiful people and they're supportive people. And fast forward now, this is just so you know, the time of this is 2006.
Ooh, right. Heading right into the Great Recession. We've already started
heading right into a crash, right? It's death around the corner, basically. And I'm like, we have no idea. We're buying at the peak. And all of a sudden, credit crunch happens. And boom, we lose everything. And it happens so swiftly. Because the bank that gave us the construction loan on the building, they were also our preferred lender for our buyers that were buying our pre-sale. We were pre-selling these condominium units. So when the credit crunch happened, they recalled all of those approvals.
Yep, they pulled everything back.
They pulled everything back, and they say, we need to reapprove all these people. And then because they couldn't reapprove those people because their criteria had changed, the loan they gave us on the building needed to get called in. So they called our loan.
And for a lot of people, they don't understand construction loans are generally short, 18, 24 months.
Yep.
After that, you got to pay for an extension. If you're lucky, you get a 6-month extension. You may have 2 built into your contract. Then it's just due.
Right?
Yeah.
So we got smoked, man. We got to the point, Chris, where myself, my sister, my dad, my mom, our 150-pound dog, my niece, and our cat were homeless.
Wow.
And it sucked because a year prior to that, we bought my mom and dad a house on the lake for Mother's Day.
Oh.
And a year later, it's gone. Bank's taking it.
That had to be gut-wrenching.
Oh, it was so hard. I mean, it was so hard. I remember we ended up living in this 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom apartment. And, you know, it was sad, man. It was sad. There were lots of tears. But I remember it was my birthday. This one, the one year, it was my birthday in 2008, December 12th. And my mom and dad, we have this ribs place in Canada called Tony Roma's.
We got out here too.
You got out here?
Yeah. Which I'm ashamed to say I've eaten too much at before. But
good, right?
It's so good.
So good. And that was like our treat. And so they had this day where they had like cheap ribs. It was like they had their special day. It ended up landing on my birthday. So we bought all these ribs and we were eating together in our house, our little apartment. And I remember we were laughing and our dog was there and my mom, you know, I remember catching a look at her and thinking to myself, how lucky am I that not once have my parents said to me, this is your fault.
Wow. Yeah, it's true. I mean, lesser people probably would take that tack, you know, but look at how that adversity built character. Look at all the positive things you got going on today, man. I look at your bio and I think to myself, this guy's a fucking stud.
Thank you.
You know, and that was built through all, it's like lifting weights. You know, you can tear some muscles and build some strength, but it takes decades of work to get there. And there's a lot of people along the way who've made mistakes. And I look at your resume, man. I gotta tell you, I've never been a fan of wholesalers.
Yeah.
I've never been a fan because I see the stuff that's going on social media and how these kids are getting influenced.
Right.
But the lesson that you've given people already in just this conversation is that the overcoming adversity is what ultimately makes you, you know, grow and scale. But timing is so important. And you're not the only one, man. My mom and I got foreclosed on. I'll never forget, you know, the idea of getting to the house and seeing my uncle there with a trailer saying, look, we're moving back, in mom's case, to Oklahoma. You know, the house is gone. It's those memories, though. They burn. I don't know about you, but they're burned into my mind. Like they're visually there. Like I remember every part of the moment so vividly.
Me too, man.
But man, the love I have for my mom, the love I have for her being there and articulating it, and she just like you, man, never said a word about anything. Never pointed a finger at anyone. Just was like, this is what we're gonna do, and you know. I know I'd be willing to bet everything I got right now. Your parents are in a much better position today, largely because of your help and your influence.
Oh, I mean, they're so happy, you know, like look, my mom and dad watch our television show on repeat all day long.
Yeah, that's so cute. I mean, you gotta love it, right? You
know, like, how cool is that, man? You know, it like makes me cry, honestly. Like, it does, because it's just like, wow. You know, look at us, look at how where love got us.
Yeah, and loyalty, man. I tell people all the time, like, blood doesn't make family; loyalty does, and it's that loyalty, you know, through adversity that really means a huge deal. So. You guys are digging your way out of this hole, and now you're going into 2007, 2008. This is the height of the Great Recession. Banks had really stopped lending. Ironically, we actually started a bank around that same time, and we were the only bank willing to lend because we were the only bank that didn't have bad loans.
Wow.
So I remember vividly that time period, and there was a huge liquidity crisis. Even banks didn't have the money to give out.
Right.
So how did you change it up? How did you wind up the man who has done so much?
So I decided I was going to stop real estate for a little while, and I went to Los Angeles to become a stand-up comedian.
Now it makes sense. Now I get it.
So that's what I did. I, you know, my family followed me. They were like, whatever, you're our captain. Let's go. You know, and I went to LA and I tried my hand at comedy. I went to the, you know, Second City and Upright Citizens Brigade. I graduated from their sketch programs. And, you know, I was going to open mics. I did okay. I mean, obviously I'm not here talking about comedy, but I did okay. You know, I tried my hand at it. I did well in sketches. I started doing sketches for Funny or Die, you know, and so that started popping off and I was doing okay there. And I was getting my, you know, kind of my feet wet in the world, but I'm looking around me and I'm like, man, like I nobody I see here is anyone I want to be.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time around the comedy club. I went to USC. I was at, you know, I live off La Brea and Sunset back in the day.
Dope.
And I got to tell you, man, like the comedy scene was either you made it and you made it big, or you were drinking and traveling every night.
Yes.
Yeah.
That, I mean, legit, right? It's like, it's literally drinking and traveling. And that's if you got it, if you got something going on.
Yeah, if you had a circuit. You had somebody.
If you're on a circuit, like you're popping if you're drinking and traveling every night, barely making it happen, right? Yeah. You're like, then you're the dude still, right? But like, or you're Kevin Hart.
Exactly, right? You were there way, way at the top where, you know, people are paying you for specials and all the things. And the sad part about comedy too, now totally off topic, because I was sitting here talking to my wife the other night. You can't do half the shit you used to do in comedy anymore. Cancel culture will kill you.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, it's, you know, today there's a protest outside of the Netflix studios. And again, I'm not voicing any opinion on it. Everybody has the right to be and do as they want. And I appreciate and I love everybody in the world. But it's interesting. It's interesting to see the art form. It's interesting to see where it's come. it's interesting to see, you know, what's offending people, and rightly so. People are offended by things that they feel are attacks to them, right? And I get it. I see all the angles. I see everybody's point of view. I empathize with people because I'm different. I'm different than others too, you know. And so knowing that, I understand what it feels like to not be in the mainstream, to be on the fringes.
It's totally true. And I look at, I saw the same, I have an Apple computer. It flashed across the top as a news in the headline. I already knew the backstory with Dave Chappelle and everything else. I thought to myself, wow, like executives are walking out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's that serious. People are literally willing to walk away from their jobs to support their beliefs. I was talking to my wife about Kyrie Irving the other day. This dude's willing to give up almost $200 million if he doesn't get his contract extension just because he doesn't want to get a COVID shot.
Right.
And look, like it or not, agree with it or not, people have like morals and beliefs they're willing to stand behind. And if they feel like you're talking to them, I mean, damn. Good for them. They're standing up on stuff. But this is an interesting time.
It's an interesting time. That's the best way to say it. It is a definitely interesting time. But looking back at it, right, I'm here in this scene, and it's not really doing anything for me. I'm not able to really make a ton of money at it. But I start looking over at Phoenix, Arizona, and I'm looking at what it cost me to live in LA. And I see that in AZ, right, I can buy a condo as a short sale for like $30,000.
Yeah.
And I can rent that thing for $850 a month.
And around what year was this?
2010.
Oh, God. Yeah, you can pick up real estate. I mean, REO, real estate owned, banks owned it.
Yes.
You can get it. Wow. It was great timing.
Great timing. So we start buying. My sister and I, we start saving our money and we start buying these short sales. And we get to a point where we amass quite a few. And I realized that I really love real estate. You know, like I left it and I came and I'm doing it now in LA remotely. I'm buying and selling in Phoenix. And I'm like, I find myself driving to Phoenix every weekend and like doing deals out there. And, you know, I get to this one situation now. We got some deal. We got some contracts out on short sales, and I don't know if you bought short sales back then, but they wouldn't all get approved, right? You would write an offer on 10 short sales, and like two or one would get approved.
Oh, I've got such a great story for you on this one. The house I'm talking to you in from right now, the house I live in today, I put an offer in 2012. It was October. I'm sorry, October 2011. The following April of 2012, Wells Fargo told me, hey, we accepted your offer. You've got 48 hours to give us a deposit. We're going to the next offer. I had no idea what property they were talking about. I didn't know from memory. You know how many offers I wrote for the exact same reason? You couldn't get anybody to get in. So I just put out a bunch of offers out there. And I red eye to Miami, was drunk the whole night. Had the next day was a Saturday. They only opened half days. Had to drunkenly stumble around Miami and try to find a Wells Fargo. But, you know, I got it. But yeah, I totally know. Back then, it was almost impossible to get a call back, much less an offer accepted.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I get these two unexpected approvals on these two houses in Arizona. And if you know back then, this was right before they started instituting deed restrictions on short sales. So they were putting these deed restrictions on short sales so that you couldn't buy and sell immediately. They'd want you to hold the property for 30, 60, or 90 days. So this is right before that, right? And so I actually have the right to resell this immediately. And I don't now have the funds to buy these because I just ended up closing on a few that got approved that same month. And so I got these two contracts in play that are live that I now have to figure out what I can do with. So I go to Craigslist and I write an ad. And I say, hey, I got these two contracts for sale on you know this address and this address. And if you're interested, give me a call. And I mark each one up $10,000 from my contract approval price. And 15 minutes later, brother, I get a phone call and I get a full price offer on these two houses.
Wow.
And I make, after closing costs, I make $18,000. And I'm sitting there in LA, twiddling my thumbs, trying to make people laugh. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here?
It's paying the bills.
Why am I here?
And it also goes to show these young kids, man, Craigslist wasn't always for pedophiles and weird party hookups. No. You actually used to use it to buy and sell stuff.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. You know, and so you know, long story short, I get into a U-Haul again. My birthday, 12/12/12. I'm barreling down the freeway.
Wow.
And I'm going, I'm crying, dude. I'm so sad I'm leaving LA because I feel like I'm leaving my dreams. I'll never be famous. Oh, and like, this is what I feel like.
And now you're on A&E.
It's so weird, bro. Yeah. I come to Phoenix, and you know, I'm newly engaged at the time, and so I'm really thinking about my family. I'm thinking about how am I going to be a man? How am I going to support my family? My wife, she has a daughter that she was coming to the relationship with, and I had a daughter from a previous relationship. So I got these two kids, and I've got, you know, my ex, and I've got my wife, and I've got my parents, and I've got me, and I've got these animals, and I just love everybody, and I want us all to survive and do well. And I'm so damn talented at this real estate shit, more than I am this you know, comedy. I got to do the right thing. I got to be a man, and I got to go make this work. And I do. And, you know, I put my heart in it, and I put my soul in it, and I'm really good at understanding value. Like, that's one thing I just have always been able to figure out, was what things are worth.
Oh, I've seen it, man. The Straight Outta Compton series. I love that YouTube video. I think it was like 26, 27 minutes. I must have watched that thing three times. And as a guy who's in banking, is in finance, I mean, I run the Straight Outta Compton series. You do is so damn good.
Thank you.
It's just so fundamentally sound. And because, I mean, you're talking about all these things that you look at, and you almost describe them as failures, but all these little steps along the way, man, the medical school, the comedy, the winning, the you know, restarting, you know, with the Great Recession, these all built up to who you are today. And you can tell it comes out in wisdom.
Thank you.
That's powerful, dude. And I got to tell you, like, that Straight Outta Compton series, I have underwriters that work for our bank that I would love to point that to. But, hey, guys, like, you need to listen to this shit, because obviously he knows a little more about it than you do. But you know,
I went to appraiser school, and I interviewed appraisers across the country, and I asked them, help me understand this so I can boil this down to simple rules that could be applied across the United States, where I can help people really understand, because I'm intuitively good at understanding value, but how do I put that in words? How do I make these rules, right? And I do, and they're simple. I've got one. It's a one-page document. I call them my appraisal rules. I give them away to free to everybody. If you guys, Chris will have a copy of it. It'll be in a link or something. You guys can find it. But if you're interested in real estate and figuring out how to know what something is worth, get that document and give it a shot. Try it. Try to figure out what a house is worth. And once you can know what a house is worth, then you know how to buy it at a deal.
Oh yeah, and that, it's funny because I've never seen anybody take the appraisal rules. So USPAP governs the appraisal rules, and appraisers are never supposed to use like a mathematical equation to come up with value for, you know, for everybody else's edification. I'm sure you know, but it took the appraisal rules and kind of the generalized appraisal thought and boiled it down into such a simple, clear thought process. I'm like, it's impossible to fuck this up. If you have this, like, this is surefire. This is so good. I actually have used it myself a couple times, admittedly, just to make sure I wasn't crazy. I bought a property, I want to say it was maybe 6-7 months ago, and I used the rules to kind of help me, like, just realign, like, hey, let me see if somebody else's perspective.
Yeah,
got to be it. It was pretty close. It was not bad.
It'll work, and it'll keep you safe, and it'll keep you from writing offers on houses that you're going to cancel on. You know, the thing about wholesaling that is I think where we need to elevate the industry. It's, you know, beyond the whole, like, fake guru, Lamborghini, Schmamborghini guy, you know, like that, forget that stuff, right? Let's talk about this in an honest way. Let's talk about this from an actual, like, perspective of, are we serving people? Are we ripping people off? What the hell are we doing out there?
Yeah, man.
You know, and I love this conversation, because if you watch anything I do, or if anybody is a part of my coaching, they'll tell you, doing the right thing is 100% of the time, 100% of the time, the answer. Do the right thing for the person you're on the phone with. Find out how you can serve the person. Find out how you can serve them. See, do they need a realtor? Do they have a beautiful house that just needs to get listed on the MLS and get top dollar for it? Refer them to a realtor and get a referral fee for that. You can still make money there.
100%. And I do want to point out one other detail too. Like, as much as you like try to help people, you give almost everything away for free here.
I do. I mean, they only pay for access.
Yeah, it's all there. And I think that the crazy thing that people get is now anybody who sells anything or does any kind of like sponsorship or mentorship, it gets labeled a bad person. I think that's messed up. But there are people out there who are willing to help you for free. And if you want to take it a level up, yeah, of course you got to pay for access. Time is valuable, right?
Right.
Totally respect that. And I don't want to stop the story. So you move with your family.
Yeah.
You're now in Arizona, and it's funny because a lot of my friends who don't have kids or wife, they don't understand that how love can be the most like stressful like thing you can put on your back to motivate.
Yeah. It is.
Love for your family, love for your kids. I mean, even the 150-pound dog, right? That love and that sponsorship that you have of them is perpetual. It doesn't go away. So you consistently want to do better. So you take the family, you take the unit. You're now in Arizona. I'm assuming your family joined you, your sister and everybody else? Like everybody?
Yeah, they all joined me out there and out here, and we start buying and selling houses, and it starts going well. It starts going really well, and I end up doing well to a point where now, you know, we're making money. The bank is flush. I'm a simple person. I wear the same clothes every day. I'm in the same black t-shirt, same blue jeans every single day. White Air Forces, that's me.
For a creepy thing that the audience can visualize, I am also wearing a black shirt and jeans, although I'm not wearing Air Forces. I'm a big Jordan 1 fan, but we're close. We're close.
Yeah. Because it's just my, you know, I'm a simple guy. I don't need to buy a bunch of stuff. I just like my life to be cool, you know. So we're like, you know, we're starting to stack in the bank. Things are going well. And I start to develop a reputation around town as an actual real deal. A guy who closes, when he gives you a commitment, he follows through on his commitment. Even if he makes a bad buy, he'll always close.
Reputation is so important in real estate. People know that you're willing to close. Banks, lenders, you know, realtors. If you're the people they believe will be dependable, you're going to get business.
And that's it. And I literally built it one relationship at a time. You know, the majority of my business is referrals.
I did not know that, but I'm going to say my ethos has always been relationships are the truest form of currency.
Yep.
How much money you have means nothing, but who you know means a tremendous amount. So it doesn't surprise me that work ethic, that discipline has paid off in referral business over time. That's probably just magnified over the years. It can only be bigger, right? People talk.
Yes, they talk and they talk. They started talking across the country. And so not only did that reputation grow here locally, but as I started to share what I was doing and people were checking me out and vetting me, they're like, this guy is actually legit. You know, my company, Keegley, that I founded with my sister and my two business partners, Josiah Grimes and Hunter Runyon, both beautiful individuals, young cats who knew way more about systemizing and building processes than I ever did. I'm an old school guy. I'm a paper and pen guy. I'm not a CRM person, right? That's not me, right? So, but they are. These two kids, they are. They're CRM people. They're technologies. They're technologists. They really understand how to scale and magnify effort 10x through systems and processes, which is great. I needed that because I was a caveman.
Yeah, know your strengths. There's nothing wrong with that. That's 100%. Right. Yeah.
So we get together and we build Keegley, which is the company that I founded. It's the number one wholesale operation in the country. We franchise that across the country now. We're over 90 franchises in the U.S. and they're all operating. They're all doing amazing. You know, it's a family. It's a culture. It's incredible, right? So we franchise and things are just popping off. And my social media where I'm sharing my information is starting to do well. And I don't even know what it's for yet. I'm like, yeah, this is cool. It's COVID time now, right? It's March 2020. I'm not going to the office anymore. I'm walking around my neighborhood all day long. So I pick up my phone and I start videotaping myself.
Yep. This is how I found you. This is where I step in.
Yeah.
I'm like, this dude's fucking good. This is how I found you.
Just talking shit on my phone. And, you know, sharing and teaching and talking and helping people not get distressed and feel pressure or depressed through COVID. I was just trying to be a person that was positive in, you know, a positive voice in this craziness that was happening. And so, you know, things people started to notice. And now I have to bring in my brother, Pace Morby, who is my co-star on the show. Pace and I, we're competitors. We're actually not business partners. And a lot of people don't realize that we compete. But we were two of the largest competitors in this market in here in Arizona. And we were chasing the same deal quite often. And what we ended up finding out was we were always bidding each other up. So rather than do that, what we decided to do was just say, you know what, bro? Why don't we just not? Why don't we just work together? Why don't we work together and share the deal? And that was a completely ludicrous idea for everybody else in the business here. They were like, you guys are nuts. Why would you ever do that? But we did. And then we started documenting it. And then in documenting that, Pace put a video on his YouTube. And it was about him and I walking through this house. Same situation. We were bidding against each other on this property. We find out it's each other. So I step out. He gets the deal. Then we share it. So we I meet him over at this property. We post on social media that we're going to do a walkthrough. And because our following is starting to grow, people show up to this house to walk through with it, wow, with us.
Yeah.
And we got a camera with us who's just kind of walking. And it turns out to be a Maricopa County Sheriff Office officer's house that passed away.
Oh my
and
God.
The dude was a hoarder.
Oh, wow.
And a drug addict.
Oh, my God.
Right? And so I'm literally in the car. I'm in the house picking up shit. Like, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? How could this guy arrest anybody? Right? Like,
oh, so my God. Yeah.
I'm saying all this stuff. And we post this video on YouTube. And A&E, somebody from A&E ends up seeing it. And they laugh their asses off. And they're like, these guys are hilarious. And then they check us out. They start vetting us out. And they're like, they're real. They actually do business and they're fun. And so without even asking our permission, this person in development at A&E packages a video that, you know, from taking our YouTube clips and whatnot, and sends it to the head of development at A&E and says, I like these guys. You know, I think these guys are the guys. And so they start reaching out to us. And I'm ignoring them. Because remember, I've come from Hollywood. So yep. I think everything is a scam, right? You know how many headshots I paid for? Right? So like,
how many goofy smiles and weird positions? Man. Yeah, no, I know it. Yeah.
So I'm getting this email from this casting director at A&E saying, we'd love to have you meet with our VP and our head of development. And I'm like, this is a lie. So I ignore them. They go to Pace and they're like, we've been trying to get a hold of Jamil. He won't respond. Can you get a hold of him? Would you two be interested in just having a quick 20-minute conversation with our head of development and the VP of programming? And he's like, sure, because Pace says yes to everything because that's how he is.
Wow, right? So now everyone's going to email Pace. Sorry, buddy.
Well, They already do. And Pace is great, guys. Blow him up.
Yeah.
PaceMorby@me.com. Yeah. So, PaceMorby.
Oh, it's cold-blooded, man. Don't worry, Pace. Like, there's like five people that'll listen to this. Don't worry, you'll be good.
So we end up getting on the Zoom call, and you know, they were like, "Yeah, we like you guys. We'd like to come out and shoot a pilot." Well, fast forward a week, they ask us to call them back. So we call them back. They said, you know, we were talking to you guys about coming out and shooting a pilot. Well, we showed our little teaser to the president, and he just wants to go right to series. Damn. So,
wow,
no pilot, straight series order, 10 episodes, let's go. And then, like, 2 months later, dude, there was a production van and 35 people out here, with cameras and microphones and boom mics and a trailer with corn nuts, because I love corn nuts. You know, like there's all this following us around, and they were like, okay, work. And I'm like, look, guys, I'm not going to be mean to anybody. I'm not going to make up fake shit. I'm going to be myself. And if that's a problem, I don't need this.
Wow.
And they're like, that is exactly what we don't want. We want you to be you. We are here for you guys. We are here for your personalities. We're here for your reality. We're here for your business. We 100% respect that. And not once did they ask us to step outside of that. Not once did they ever, you know, want to add a little bit of seasoning to our mix. They were like, you guys are enough as it is. We don't need to do anything here. And they gave us this creative freedom, and they put us together with this incredible team of producers and camera people and directors of photography, and they're just professionals. They're all just consummate professionals. Everyone at A&E that we've worked with has been so wonderful. And in all honesty, that's not usually what the case is with television like this. You know, you always hear from the talent afterwards that, man, it sucked, you know, but from our point of view, it's been nothing but a beautiful relationship. And we just found out that, you know, season 2 and season 3 are...
And 3, wow.
And 3, yeah.
They're green lit. You guys are good to go?
Yeah, they're doing a big order.
Holy 20. Shit, I'm going to need to get an autograph at some point soon, because this might be a game changer for you, son. But look at the authenticity that comes through. I happened to watch the show when it premiered. Like, I mean, I follow your social media. I knew it was coming up. And I got to tell you, the authenticity that came out in the show, like the real moments, the real your personality, you got to love how it's kismet in a way that all these things built together in that comedy, that personality, your genuineness, and even Pace and you. You guys have this great bond, this relationship. You know, it. I have a brother. I got, you know, and I had hoped to do something like that with him at one point. And maybe, well, he's young. He's below 30, so you never know. You don't really know anything until you, you know, get kids and all that stuff. But, you know, it's such a great relationship you and your family have, and to see that level of success and to see, you know, you're one of the few guys I look at and I'm like, shit, this guy needed this. This is the guy you want to be in front of the camera talking about things. Because it sets an expectation for people that what they really, being authentic, being real, working, and, you know, being true to your family, all those things, it paid dividends for you, man. Like, you got to feel that way, right?
I do.
It's just, I couldn't wish it for a better person. I mean, it's honestly, you're a great guy, and I'm super, super happy I got the opportunity just to chat with you.
Well, I mean, I feel like our friendship is going to go much farther than, you know, this podcast. Like I said, I just bought a house in Marina Del Rey, right on the water.
Yeah, not too far, man. Yeah.
So we're close to each other. Actually, we're going to be up there for Thanksgiving. So I'd love to hang out with you if you guys are free.
I'll bring the corn nuts.
My wife and I, and you know, let's hang out. Let's have dinner. Let's be homies, man. Like anybody who's listening, anyone who's listening to this, and if you're wondering, you know, what does it take to make it? Let me just say this to you, like right off the hop. It has nothing to do with what you do. It has to do with what you think and how you feel. It has everything to do with what you think and how you feel. If you wake up in the day and you're like, how am I going to get over on the world? How am I going to take? Then understand that you will be miserable and poor. If you wake up and you decide, how can I give? How can I share? And who can I love on today? You will be blessed and you will find your purpose. And with that purpose will come the life that you will have never dreamt you can live. And I can tell you that from experience. I can tell you that from anybody that I've seen get successful in life and be happy. Not successful in life and be miserable, but successful in life and be happy. They all generated their reality from inside of their heads and hearts. And so just be mindful. Be mindful of what you think. Be mindful of the things that you're paying attention to. Be mindful of the things you're liking. You know, are you gravitating towards things on social media where you watch people get hurt, suffer, where fights, you know, pain? Like if that's the kind of thing that's making you smile and laugh, that's okay. But understand that you're attracting that exact energy to your day.
Mm. The power of energy, man. That's such a beautiful and smart way to put it. Jamil, I can't thank you enough for coming on. You know, I didn't really plug any of your socials. Please tell everybody where to find you. Tell them, you know, how and when to watch the show. I want everybody to be able to get access to you. We will obviously post this on the podcast notes when it posts, but let them know where to find you.
Awesome, man. So you can come to my YouTube channel. It's just youtube.com/Jamil Damji. My name is spelled JAMILDAMJI. You can also find me on Instagram @JDamji. That's @JDAMJI. And, you know, Facebook, I don't really mess around there. I don't play on Twitter or whatever. But, yeah, just hit me up on IG or YouTube. I'm super interactive. Like, I'm, you know, I got a TV show, but so let's know each other. Who cares? I'm not that. I none of that matters to me. I'm just so not what you might think. I want to be your friend. Whoever you are out there, if you think I'm talking to you, I am. Hmm.
Appreciate you, brother. We'll see you next time.
Appreciate you back.
I hope you enjoyed today's conversation on the Higher Standard Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe or follow on whatever platform you were listening to this on. If you like this episode, please write a review and share it with us. You're getting the show up and running right now, so every message, every review, and every note counts. This show exists to showcase what's possible when leaders decide to uphold a higher standard for their businesses, their investments, their families, and most importantly, themselves. If you want to see more of my content, I post daily on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, so be sure to follow me on your favorite social media platform. And with that, it is a wrap. And as always, I look forward to hanging with you all on the next episode.